As is always the case, whenever an artist becomes popular, style-conscious scene setters in the rock press immediately desert them in search of fresh fur. Such was the situation described by one of the UK's foremost writers, Charles Shar-Murray, when reviewing Honky Chateau for Cream. Here, Charles reads that piece from June 1972.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight.
These days, you have to get fashionable before you get successful, or else you get resented. And if you get too successful without first being fashionable enough to please all the little cultists, they throw the whole cat tray at you. That's what they did to Elton John. Despite the fact that he'd been slogging round the basements of the business for donkey's years, when he eventually broke through, he did it so fast that people began to hate him because they thought he was an overnight success. His second album, Elton John, was greeted with fulsome applause. International Times gave him a double page, imagine that now. Richard Williams said that it was the year of Elton John, and Al Kooper dubbed it the perfect album and carried it about with him everywhere. Then all hell broke loose in America, and plump little Reg Dwight from Pinner became public superstar number 318B.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find you.
Put out another album with less orchestra and more funk, cleaned up with both of them. Gold discs everywhere. He was so overpromoted that even Life magazine heard about him. He put out a movie soundtrack that was so sweet people put drops of it into their coffee. A live album that everybody but me hated because it was noisy, chaotic and tried too hard. And another studio album that came dangerously close to replacing style with mannerism. Everybody got sick to death of Elton John. So maybe he did get cliché-ridden too early. Maybe he did depend too much on the lavish strings of Paul Buckmaster and the immaculate deluxe studio funk of Caleb Quay, BJ Cole, Hobie Flowers and the rest of the session mafia. Maybe the poor funker was too uncool for the hard rock hierarchy. But all he wanted to do was write a few songs, play some piano, sing a bit, and boogie. But Elton John was good, and sometimes he was a lot better than that. And he was viciously dismissed by people who fawned over lesser talents. Because if they don't like you, baby, you can play whatever music you want, and it won't change their minds at all. Or maybe it will. There's a new Elton John album out now, and it would be nice to think that a lot of people will be eating crow when they hear it. Because it shows that Elton John is still growing, still playing, still creative, and he's still better than James Taylor and Leon Russell put together.
I got bopping in the winter, ice skating on the river, with my pretty little black-eyed girl.
Most of this album is good enough to make me want to discuss each cut in detail, but time and space have their own demands. Just let me remind you to listen to Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters, a title that instantly reminds me of Rita Coolidge and Leon Russell. Dig the Bupshiwah backing vocals on the Lennon-like Hercules. Watch out for the tune of Susie Dramas, which is ripped straight off from Roy Wood's Brontosaurus. And above all, try to hear this album. If you thought Elton John was just a mimsy little cretin purveying sludge and dribble, step right up and feel the man's muscle now. Get hold of Tumbleweed Connection and then move up to this, which may even be better. There'll be some mellow times had in the Honky Chateau.
Charles Shar-Murray there, reading from his review of 1972's Honky Chateau. You're listening to Rock's Back Pages, telling the story of some of the biggest names in music through some of the best writing on the subject. And this week we're looking at Elton John.